Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred was trying to win me over in regard to proactive reliability engineering. Not that I'm a difficult subject to win over in that regard, but he was still trying nonetheless.
Well, yeah. I think you missed yesterday I was asked by an organization to do a presentation as they kicked off a design for reliability program within their company. And I had a lot of fun with that and enjoyed, as you know, I love talking about reliability. But one of the questions that was centered to the topic of what they wanted me to address is, well, how do you get out of being reactive to being proactive? So it wasn't that proactive was not the goal or that we agree that that's where you should be. But they recognized that they were in a reactive mode. They waited till field problems occurred. They waited till enough scrap was occurring in the manufacturing, or they waited till, some disaster occurred and then they'd go fix it. And that was their approach, or is their approach to reliability. And so the basic question is, well, how do you transition efficiently from being reactive to proactive? And part of the concern was, well, that'll take a lot of time and we've still got to ship products, and maintain our business. So how are we going to do both? And let me think this through a little bit. Because most of it is infrastructure and where's the information and when's it available? So that you start tamping down or eliminating those events that cause reactions from occurring. And then you can double down and get really sophisticated about it and really good at it. But it's, to me, there's some real basic things. So that's my thought. So before I tip my hand, what's your first, if you go into an organization and they're firefighting and they want to improve their program, where do you start?
I might have a different perspective for you, not in terms of the principle of what you're saying, but so if I start at my start, I hate reliability engineering types who say, look, reliability is important because customer this, brand reputation that, customers demand more and more from us and all these other things which are demonstrably true, but are really hard to connect with human beings when they're 10 years into a developmental one year into a 10-year developmental program. And they might not even be in the organization by the time the warranty claims start coming in. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to make those very tangible links between what the customer is going to think of a system for which you're contributing a very small part to 10 to 15 years from now. Obviously, it could be much shorter time frame than that. So for me, when I'm trying to talk to people about being proactive the way you're describing, Fred, is I always try and say, let's forget all that good stuff that we know is going to happen. If you make reliable stuff, then over time, your customer is going to recognize this and reward you for it. But it doesn't matter. Let's be honest. It doesn't really motivate people today because they don't see themselves as part. They're not the organization. They are engineer XYZ who's trying to get a good appraisal report by December of this year. And so I really try and focus on the other benefits of reliability engineering, which a lot of organizations don't even know exist. So we have talked at length, Brett, about how organizations can actually drastically reduce time to market / budget costs just by having a really proactive reliability program where, for example, they have FMEAs done well and upfront, as an example, which means that those problems and issues that haunt all the other all their competitors' product developments just don't happen because they've already anticipated the overwhelming majority of how things are going to fail, which also double as reasons that your product development process is going to be delayed. I think I use a liquid fuel rocket example where they actually had an academic study which showed that when you had this reliability mindset from day one, they could demonstrate cost savings of about 73% and a 50% reduction in schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people don't associate that with reliability. There's this whole, you can choose it to be reliable, cheap, or fast, as in quick to market. Choose two. It's not the case.
Yep.
And I found that when we really are able to get through to people and say, hey, look, you can actually start realizing benefits this week, all of a sudden productivity goes to the roof because they get it. It can actually help their quarterly budget. It means they won't have to put out those fires which just destroy budgets and time to market, or you know, just kicking the cans down the road. So that's my approach. Always trying to focus on, hey, the short-term benefits are amazing, not just the fires that you're going to observe later on, and all of a sudden they start looking for those benefits.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm guilty of saying, you know, the customer and the long-term and brand, and those are all major motivators to me. But on an individual engineer point, it's like, so do you like being interrupted halfway through your development day and pulled into a customer meeting where they're complaining about something, and then you spend the next 2 weeks troubleshooting and fixing some other engineer's problem that they mm-hmm. built, you know, 3 years ago? No, most of them don't like it. And so if you create a reliable product and you and your team spend the effort upfront to get it, the quality and the reliability embedded into the product, you're not going to get a call the week before product launch with all hands on deck. We got to solve this issue. Now your vacation gets canceled, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. Program managers, do you want to have I often ask program managers and engineering directors, what keeps you up at night and kind of thing? And the program managers are, as you illustrated, is shipping on time. You know, that's one of their major goals, especially right. consumer products. Which makes sense. It's the nature of the business. But how often do you ship on time? Well, about 75% of the time. Well, how much does it cost you when it doesn't ship on time? And then they know the number. All right. Yeah. Well, what if you spent a tenth of that to build extra prototypes? Or, well, those are expensive, right? If you spent a tenth of your demonstrated cost for shipping late earlier, you have an increased chance of finding all these issues that you now have months to solve, not days. Would you like to do that? And you're like, oh, okay. When you put it that way, and then, you know, and then development or design engineer or engineering managers, what percentage of your staff is fixing prior problems? And it's almost always 25%. You know, it ranges by different companies and industries, but it's a significant portion of their engineering talent is just fixing problems.
Right.
And it says, well, what could you do if you had a quarter of your engineers back to actually develop a new product? Oh, we could do this, we can do that. And I'm like, well, let's focus on getting a reliable product out so that you have your staff back. You know, oh, okay. When you put it that way. So yeah, I've often advocated that you got to know your audience, who you're talking to and what's important to them in order to connect it directly to what's important to them. It builds a better support network for improving reliability programs. The hard part is that when you're going from one disaster to the next, and you're trying to scramble for resources and your budgets are going down because market share is going down, it just feels like a trap.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to step out of that and set a path that's going to break that cycle. And it's, that I know is difficult to mm-hmm. recognize in the moment. One of the tools, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, is it urgent and the difference between urgent and important?
Yep.
Right? I don't know of anybody that hasn't agreed that reliability and quality is important. Right? The trouble is it's rarely urgent. And it goes back to the phone just rang and our major customer is complaining about something's not working. Well, that's urgent, but it may not be important. You know, and sometimes it is, but the hard part is, and even in my personal time management stuff, I like the urgent stuff. It's right in front of me. I know what to do. I go solve it. and I check it off my list. The important stuff oftentimes are much larger projects and more daunting and take more effort to get going and get the ball rolling. Even though I know it's very, very important work to be done, it's usually because it's a more unknowns, more uncertainty. I don't know exactly what the problem is. I just know that one of the things I want to do is upgrade the Ascendo's framework, the site that it sits on. And a big part of my hesitancy is that I know it's going to break a bunch of stuff. I just don't know what. And it's not like I can shift over one piece at a time and sort it out. It's the whole site goes on one 2 hour block. It goes and there's no going back. And I'm like, oh man. So I know it's important to upgrade the site and keep it current and increase its speed and usability and all that other stuff. But it's been 2 years and I'm still hesitating. Yes,
right. I mean, you got a slightly different conundrum there to your guy shipping stuff on time or not. But no, I really do take your point. And I think coming back to the premise of this conversation is when organizations are really, they know they need to do something different. I think we both agree that the only good reliability program is a proactive reliability program. And that's where, being able to phrase it in that way, you'll be able to say to organizations who are consistently fighting fires, who are by definition reactive, you say, no, you need to become proactive. And the motivation piece, the answer to the question, what keeps you up at night, that's, as a reliability engineer, that's the stuff you need to be on top of to actually make sustainable change.
Yeah. So what would you tell them to actually change though? What would be it varies by organization. What have you seen that would make the biggest difference to get them moving in towards a proactive program?
For me, it's, I've talked about the reliability value map. It's just linking reliability stuff to value. You just did it for your guy. He said, hey, look, you spend a tenth of what you spend on late shipping on manufacturing prototypes, and let's pull up that thread. The reason why the penny dropped for the guy is because you just made a tangible link between the outcome of a reliability activity or plan or initiative with value. So for me, I always try and get organizations to link reliability to value, and they won't know some of those metrics or levers until you go in there and say, hey, remember how you had these 10 code red design reviews because things weren't going the way you wanted and your resolution involved this, and this. Well, just so happens that reliability activities X, Y, and Z, had they been done up here, would have prevented these catastrophes and delays and budget blowouts to have occurred. So they would have cost, the salary of 5 people for a week, but they would have saved you 3 months worth of
hand-wringing and all hands on deck kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yep. And reputation cost, because your customer now needs to be told that they're going to be expecting delay, whatever it is.
Right.
And all of it. So it's always a linkage back to things that matter here and now, which has to be expressed in terms of value.
Yeah. One of the things I find in reactive organizations is reliability is pretty much just a banner on the wall. It's important, but we don't measure it. Yeah, it's important, but it's too expensive. Yeah, it's important, but we don't know what the target is. We don't know what the goal is. So part I see is, one, the value map is exact spot on, and it also has to have a consistent way across the organization to set objectives and to measure them and to monitor it, to get the feedback. Because if I say we want to be 98% reliable in 2 years, but we have no way of understanding if we're on target to hit that or not, it's a worthless measure. And vice versa, if we do a whole slew of reliability tests and the end of the cycle of testing, we go, okay, we got results, but we don't know whether that means it's good or not, because we don't know what we're defining as good enough. And so part of it, I think, is the communication of what are we trying to do and how do we apportion that and communicate it and then simultaneously measure it and model it and and go back up the other side saying, well, are we on target or not? And that's free in an organization. We want to be 98% reliable over 2 years of use. You can say that for free. And then it organizes the activities to measure it, which you're probably already doing a lot of activities that are disorganized. They just mm-hmm. add to the chaos that make you feel like you're doing reliability work, but you're not.
Yep.
Because the results don't support actually giving you feedback. So part of it is realigning the activities you do so that it aligns with, are we on target or not? Are we finding enough issues early enough or not? But between those two things, which are both free to do, right? They don't cost an investment other than thinking it through, which I know for some people, myself included, can hurt sometimes. But those things don't take a lot of time to implement and to communicate. And then it starts to break down that reactive role by looking at what those activities like environmental testing and product testing and, prototype building and breadboarding and stuff as vehicles to give you feedback rather than just checking off a box kind of thing. So there's a lot of stuff we can do for free that gets that ball rolling. And that's the basic message I have in this one is how do you start? Well, you have two or three conversations that set the framework in the communication and then reinforce that. And that gets you going.
And and make sure you have those tangible links to how reliability engineering, which is often sold as just focusing exclusively on failures in the hands of the customers. Now, actually, you have failures every day in your production process. If you can eliminate those failures to be on time, those failures to be in spec, those failures for one part to mesh nicely with its adjacent neighbor. All those little mini, we don't call them failures technically because our customer hasn't observed it yet, but realistically, they're failures. They cost us time and money. If you want to eliminate them today so you can ship on time, you can be the only design team that doesn't have any issues in that first design review of the entire system or whatever it is that matters to you and your team, then the ingenuity of those engineers is unleashed. To be proactive.
You know, there's one other way that teams can take the initiative, make a change to become proactive. Or there's two other ways that come to my mind. One of them is you drive yourself completely out of business and you go find another company that gets it. And it's the quick and easy way to do it. Painful for the organization, but you might find a company that is proactive already and you can work there. Mm-hmm. That's being a bit facetious, but that happens. And another technique is you have a big disaster. I've had a number of clients that, said, hey, we're struggling here. We are up against the ropes. We need to do something different. Can you help us do that? And so never let a good disaster go to waste is kind of my motto. Unfortunately, that's not always it's a perilous journey. Why wait till you have a disaster? And so if you can implement the simple changes of the connecting what you're doing in reliability to the value to the organization and the individuals and set up the clear communication of what is reliability and what we're doing for it. You don't have to wait for a disaster to occur. So it's,
well, you mentioned that, going to another company, which is more proactive is one extreme option. I think it's increasingly unextreme these days. I think a lot more younger engineers, being a lot more discerning about which organization they're going to spend their career with. And I think it's a good thing. We've spoken at length about, especially that time at one conference where some old manager complained about how young engineers would just never stayed at his company. And it's just not fair these days. They just don't do that anymore. And again, it's open that rabbit warren discussion. But the reality is, I think, younger engineers are changing the market somewhat. They're actually interviewing organizations more so than organizations are interviewing them. If they go to an organization they don't like, they think nothing of leaving within a relatively short period of time.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's true. And I think that's all for the good. I think it's going to up the game for programs and companies around the world. So anyway, it's hopefully the folks that listen to this podcast are obviously not in a reactive type organization. I can't imagine that. They're all, leading stellar best in class type programs. But if you've got a question or comment or thought about that, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a new button on that site now. Instead of just a typing in a comment and sending it to us, which a number of folks have done over the years, there's now a button that you can record an audio file. You can record your question, and we'll get an alert and an email with that recorded clip on it. And we can listen to your question and more than likely add you to one of the future episodes and actually hear your voice asking your question, and then we can respond to it. That would be really cool. I heard that on another podcast a couple weeks ago, and I thought, let me see how that works. How did they actually do that? And it's not too difficult. So you certainly can join the conversation, and we'd love to hear from you, literally hear from you. And that, I think that would be way cool. And if you've got a story that goes from how you went from reactive to proactive and how you made that change, we may not have hit on what made a difference for your organization. Let us know that. It's unfortunately, my audio clip service is limited to 90 seconds per clip. So you might have to record a couple of messages if you have a longer story, or just give me a call. We'll do it. Get you online.
You're saying, Fred, if they want to have an extended rant, they need to call us up, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much. And that's fine, too. And you can find Chris and I on LinkedIn. You can also find us on our About pages. And certainly we can arrange time to get on online and talk to you. I actually talked to a young man out of France. He's electrical engineering, but he was really interested in reliability. He's taken some coursework in that, and he was looking at some career advice, what to focus on, those kind of things. So we had a really pleasant chat for about a half an hour, and I enjoy that. And if I can help with a little bit of what I know or not, or give you a way to think through something, we appreciate it, and we're glad to help. More importantly, if you've got large sums of money and you want us to come talk to your team or something like that, you can do. Oh, I'm being silly here, but more to the point for the show, for speaking of reliability, we've often said it is, please join the conversation. We love hearing from you. And now we have this new feature that we can literally hear from you. But you can always just give us a call, and that's always an option too. So with that, Chris, I think we'll wrap this one up and get on with the rest of our days, which I understand involves snow shoveling in your case. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's now obviously, for whatever reason, after our 3-day reminder of winter, it's just now warmed up. So it's all melting away. Now it's all sloshy. I don't know what's going on. Okay. I don't know why I left Australia. The season seemed to make sense to me.
All right, well. You'll become Canadian sooner or later. You'll get used to it. Maybe not.
Well, I built my own ice rink in my backyard, so that's
you're about as Canadian as you get now.
That's right.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Chris.
Thanks, Fred. Good chat.
Enjoy. Cheers. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.